You want to learn about aliens, extraterrestrials, UFOs, visitations, military abductions? Join Joe Metaldo on Wednesday night, 8 to 10 p.m. for his episodes of UFO Undercover. Come check out Christina George's new show, Paranormal Connections, only on United Public Radio, Monday, 8 to 10 p.m. See you Monday. Hello, you're listening to United Public Radio. I'm Joe Montaldo, host of News on the Flip Side. Check us out every Saturday night, 6 to 9 p.m. Central Time.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Live.
Aloha, everybody. This is Kathy Bilski, your spiritual warrior goddess on the Quantum Leap Let Light Unite show. And this is UPRN Radio at uprn.radiostream321.com. And this is September 16th, 2016, Friday. Well, it depends where you are. And depending on where you are is what, depending on what time it is, huh? So tonight I have Mary Olson coming on. We're going to talk about nuclear. And, you know, the South Dakota pipeline, they had a nuclear somewhere up in that pipeline. They had a nuclear leak. Oh, my God. I'm thinking about Mary Olson. They had an oil spill up there, and the guys let it go on. You know, I mean, talk about reptilian logic. So if you want to call Oasis Petroleum, who's responsible for that pipeline and for that oil spill, go get your pen and paper. Yes, I have their phone number. And they're called Oasis Petroleum Incorporated. And this is their corporate headquarters. It's 281-404-9500. And if you want to write them, it's 1001 Fannin Street, F-A-N-N-I-N Street, Suite 1500, Houston, Texas, 77002. Now, if you really want to call the White House and really be a big bitch for the earth, let me give you the White House number. Now, this is not Obama's personal phone number. Okay, I could get in trouble for that one, and really, I am so not in that loop. So I'm going to give you the number to where he works. You know, that big White House, okay, in Washington, D.C.? Okay. So their phone number is, for comments, 202-456-1111. And they have a switchboard, too. Awesome. 202-456-1414. I bet you've called that switchboard. You could probably get a hold of any congressman or senator that's, you know, hanging out there. I don't know. You might want to give it a try and really, you know, make complaints. This is not acceptable behavior. These guys have really gotten out of line. And then there's been another oil spill, and I'm pretty sure it's down south around Alabama. So do we want another pipeline? No, we don't, do we? They don't have a very good track record. So let me give you really quick the White House's phone number. It's 202-456-1111. So before I bring Mary on, I want to do some energy work with you tonight. And, you know, I finally wrote that energy work on cutting Pokemon Go magic from Earth and all life forms. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, then listen to the energy work, because it kind of explains it while I'm doing this power work. So I'm going to ask you to sit down and allow energy to come through you and just give this energy, okay? All right. Let there be light, in the name of the presence of God, which I am, through the magnetic power, sacred fire vested in me, I command. I call to Michael the Archangel to cut all ties to all dark magic that is protecting the game, Pokemon Go, and making its true intent invisible, as all these veils of protective magic are removed from every aspect of the game. See people becoming conscious and stop playing the game, removing the app from all electronic devices. Let us now cut all emotional attachments to this game, going back to the time it was first invented. in 1995 to now. See, all these indoctrinated beings awaken as we ask their higher selves to reconnect them to the Creator. Let people be given their divine missions and purposes to fill up their time so they lose total interest in Pokemon Go. See, people reading the terms of agreement with new eyes and understanding that when they play Pokemon Go, they are being used as spies for the government as well as giving up much of their rights to Niantic. This results in them removing the app from all electronic devices for everyone in the family as well as giving the company notice that they want all their information deleted from their archives and servers. We again call to Michael the Archangel to take your sword of blue flame and cut all ties to all demons, Pokemon, all versions, along with Pokemon Go, manifest to anything on the earth. We tie and bind all demons from the game so they are now powerless. Let's send them through the violet flame to transmute their energies back to light. Now send them back to God, replacing that space with an angel of light. We cut all ties to all satanic symbols and energy in the game. Let's anchor the violet flame in every satanic symbol so it can no longer emit any dark energy out to anyone who looks at those pictures. See, parents becoming conscious and really seeing the satanic game with new eyes, resulting in them not allowing their children to play. Let them also understand that Pokemon, translated from Japanese, means pocket monsters. See them discussing this with their children, being firm, so the app is removed from all electronic devices and the game is removed from the house. If the child disagrees, see the parents having a backbone and simply take the phone from the child. Playing a satanic game is not open for discussion. We call the higher selves of store owners who have not been asked to participate in the game, yet find themselves part of the game without giving permission to Niantic or any of their agents to put a monster in their establishment. See all these store owners filing a class action lawsuit against Niantic and all agents for making their stores part of the game without asking for permission. See Niantic and all agents losing big and removing the game from all stores, homes, and people that have not given their permission to be used in the game. We call the higher selves of Niantic and all their agents to absorb in the light of the Creator, and if you choose not to, let remind you about the law of karma. What goes around comes around, and once the karmic board asks if it's for your highest good that you receive a return of your misdeeds ASAP, they said yes. Did I mention that they're friends of mine, the karmic board? Yeah. Here are some possibilities with return karma. Your whole life falls apart. It's like living a perpetual Murphy's Law. If it can go wrong, it will. And amplified by Mercury in retrograde. What does that mean? Appointments can fall apart and plans fall apart. All your vehicles can break down. Electrical problem, blah. Problems with computer and cell phones, just to name a few. And if you're out of alignment with nature, then we're going to invite all the rats, fleas, flies, snakes, bees, spiders, and mold to infest everything you own from home to workplace. Starting to sound fun yet? And it gets better. You're going to see me in dream time. When you see me, I'll be beautiful with the most amazing sparkly rainbow-colored dress you have ever seen. My hair will be down to the floor. And just when you think to yourself, this is the most beautiful woman you've ever seen, my hair is going to shape-shift into shape-shifting snakes. And about right now, you're going to start running like the wind. And, you know, it's really not going to matter where you go. My snakes are going to find you because they can shapeshift, and they're going to bite you. And the venom is going to be so strong that it's going to turn you human. And you're going to have much compassion for people. And, oh, my God, it does get better. The venom is so strong that it's going to affect all your generations, past, present, and future, for more than 100,000 years, and they're also going to turn human. So sleep well, and, you know, I think it really sucks to be right now. So be it. Take a deep breath and release it. All right, let's call Mary Jo. Por favor. Thank you guys very much for giving that energy. You know, it's really important for people to actually be conscious.
This is Mary.
Hi, Mary. This is Kathy Bilski. How are you?
Good, good. I'm here. I'm fine.
Thank you for staying awake.
You're welcome.
Well, we're going to just jump right in, and we're going to talk about nuclear, and you are like the nuclear, oh my gosh, I had a brain dead. You're
I'm a career woman. I've had 25 years in this job. Oh, my goodness. How did that happen?
Life goes by. But we have talked with so many things, and we want to talk about nuclear fission, because I know you want to talk about that. But isn't there something happening where they want to bring nuclear material on our freeways?
Oh, that is happening day in and day out. But at the moment, there's a new proposal to take a kind of waste that has never been on the highway. And quite frankly, we, in our expert opinion, and that we is a big we, it's people in the United States and Canada, including top PhD expert witness people, are saying this type of waste should never, ever be moved. It is the kind that is in tanks in South Carolina and in Washington State, leftovers from reprocessing of irradiated fuel. It is so lethally radioactive that it'll, you know, if it doesn't have a shield on it, it'll give a lethal dose to people in way under a minute. And it's liquid. They are talking about shipping highly radioactive liquid from Ontario to South Carolina on our regular interstates. And it's just plain nuts.
What happens if there's a leak?
What happens is if there's a leak, to quote my good friend Kevin Camp, a dab will do ya. A dab is all it takes to cause contamination that would, you know, really be big trouble, especially in urban areas. And as we well know, even the routes that would choose the fewest cities, like down through Pennsylvania and then through the area where I live here in North Carolina, on its way to the big bomb factory in South Carolina, there's still population centers, and if any of that material were to leak where people live, it's going to cause a lot of cancer, it's going to cause a lot of contamination. The contamination is going to cost not only health and lives, but also, you know, depending on where it is, up to millions, and in some cases, billions of dollars, even a small percentage of one shipment. And the Department of Energy is talking about sending 150 shipments over a several-year period. So this is a huge deal, and a lot of people are waking up to it and saying, hey, this is a really bad, huge deal.
Well, coming living in Hawaii, I know that, you know, like we have one big major highway that goes around the island. It's two-lane. I call it the big, you know, racetrack. If anything, you know, like down south, if the volcano flowed over that, you know, that's toast. That highway is toast. We cannot use it again, and you have to be literally rerouted around the lava. Now,
right.
You know, you have a accident with this radioactive material. Are they going to do the same thing and say this part of the highway is no longer accessible? Are they just going to, you know, what are they going to, what's their contingency plans? Do they have any?
The first thing is you have to know that there has been a leak. And if a leak occurs, one of the biggest vectors for spreading radioactivity are other vehicles. You can't detect radiation with your senses. You don't necessarily know that radioactivity is in a drip or a puddle that you might drive over. And this stuff is so intensely radioactive that if there was a puddle of it and someone was on a motorcycle, the amount of time it would take for them to go through that little puddle would be a lethal level of radiation. So this is really
and they would not
like
even
nutty.
And they would not even be aware of that's where it came from.
Right. And they, you know, die instantly. It takes sometimes a couple weeks or a month. But if you have a lethal dose, you know, that's it. If you have a semi-lethal dose, then you have a chance to recover from the radiation sickness. But these are like the levels that the liquidators, the people who were dealing with the Chernobyl meltdown in 1986 and Fukushima in 2011, these are the same levels of radiation that those emergency workers were encountering. So the first question is, do you even know that you have a problem? The second question is, what do you do when you have the problem? And very often the Department of Energy says, oh, well, we'll dispatch an expert team. Well, we have track record that those expert teams sometimes take as long as 48 hours to get to the scene. And what's happening is that the local officials do cordon off the area and keep people away. But what if people have already been contaminated? What if they're already being impacted? I mean, it's a big, huge set of issues. But one thing that people don't realize is that you don't have to have an accident for these shipments to impact people's health. A perfect container with no accident at all and not leaking anything out still has penetrating gamma rays that are like an X-ray machine that you can't turn off. And yes, they do limit the amount, but these particular shipments are going to be allowed to be 100 times higher than any other because they're going to be in a closed truck body. And so the drivers and anyone who is around these shipments while they're in transit will be getting some level of radiation with absolutely no benefit whatsoever.
How are they going to find people to drive this stuff?
Driving this stuff, but imagine around here in the mountains, we get tie-ups on the interstates all the time caused by various things, rock slides, an accident that didn't even involve the radioactive shipment. But people sit on the interstate for sometimes an hour, 2 hours, waiting. So if you were next to one of these trucks, you wouldn't even necessarily know that you were getting a radiation dose, but you could be. And
wow.
So it's really something that we think should be avoided, and there are alternatives. This is waste from a medical production facility in Canada at a site called Chalk River. It has highly enriched uranium in it, which is the kind of stuff you use for making nuclear weapons, which the United States sent to Canada. And there is a treaty that requires that type of material to be under U.S. control, either to come back. Or in Indonesia, a very similar situation has just occurred with a very similar waste. And instead of shipping that liquid waste, what they did was to add a different kind of uranium to make it no longer super concentrated bomb grade. They diluted it down. It's called downblending. And then they solidified the waste, and it's no longer under the treaty because it's been downblended. Couldn't use it for a bomb anymore. And that waste is being stored in Indonesia. There's absolutely no reason this couldn't be done in Canada. Canada, for one thing, is our ally in the nuclear weapons world anyway. So, you know, there's just no real urgency except for the DOE wants to keep the lights on down in South Carolina, and they can charge off some money for bringing this waste there. There's absolutely no justification for endangering all the people along the way of 150 shipments the lights on.
I would bet that the United States owes Canada a lot of money, and this is their way of getting their money back.
Maybe, but I think it's a bunch of guys who want to set a precedent because we have all this waste building up at nuclear power plants in the United States, and they want to move it. And so they're just trying to sneak some precedent in, saying these shipments went okay, and so the next ones are going to go okay too. So I'm really proud that we busted them, and we filed a legal action with about, I think there's six different organizations that are listed on there, and there's support in Canada, organizing going on to get their government to respond, because there wasn't even an environmental impact statement made. There was no Homeland Security analysis for security for these shipments. And there's a lot of homework that they just plain didn't do. And so at the very least, we can slow them up and force them to do that while working politically to try and get them to adopt this other approach, which is to downblend and solidify and store it where it is.
Now, so, what's going on with the EPA also saying that it's all right if we have a higher dose of radiation?
Oh, yeah. So, like, if there were an accident, remember we were talking about the radioactivity of this liquid seeping out, and if there was a puddle, okay, what would happen with that puddle? If it started to rain or it was already raining, some of that radioactivity would be washed off the road or the shoulder or whatever and eventually get into surface and groundwater. And these EPA rule that just came out, well, actually it's a set of guidance called the Protective Action Guides, or PAGs. And a whole portfolio of them have been developed during the Obama years, and they were all released recently, with the last one, which is for the drinking water standard. Now, this is really egregious because our day-in, day-out regulation of drinking water and how much radioactivity can be in it says that an annual level for an adult should be 4. Now, I don't really like radiation standards. I'm going to say 4 millirems. I'm just going to say pay attention to the 4 part and don't worry about the millirem part. And then notice that EPA is saying that after an accident or a dirty bomb or a meltdown or anything like that where there's an emergency situation, that for even an extended period of time, like years, no local official has to do anything if the drinking water levels are 500, 4 versus 500. And 500 is high. 500 is like a quarter of what they allow nuclear workers to get in this country. So, you know, I mean, it's really not a protective action guide. It's more like a limited liability guide.
Wow. You know, it's just crazy. You know, we're going to send these trucks through. And, oh, by the way, we're just going to let you do the exposure to be higher. Oh, nice guy.
Oh, yeah. They're coming right together. Now, there is one thing about the protective action guide. We totally, completely oppose how high those levels are. But an interesting thing happened. In the drinking water section, for the first time ever, a federal agency has said there should be a more stringent guideline for children. I still don't like the level that they say, because they said 500 for adults. They, in the same guidance, say, well, but children should only get 100. Well, 100 is still too high for children. But it's a milestone in the history of our post-atomic world that a regulator is actually saying for the first time ever that there should be a tighter standard, a more protective standard for children compared to adults.
Well, you've mentioned many times that how women are really affected, you know, 10 times more than men are by radiation?
Yes, this is a finding that still a lot of work to be done on it, but it is a solid finding in the data. It comes from tracking the people who survived the atomic bombings in Japan in 1945. There were close to 200,000 people who were enlisted into a study, started 5 years later, around 1950. And those people have been tracked across their lifespans, and now we have, it's been 70 years, but in 2006, the data for 60 years was published. And in that data, we can see two things very clearly. One is that the people who were children at the time of the exposure got the most cancer overall. And that in that group, boys got more cancer than people who were adult men by a factor of 5 times more. But those who were female and children got double that. So 10 times more than the adult male. And why that is so crucially important to talk about, to know about, to act on, is that every radiation standard, except for this last new EPA one, is based on the body being an adult male. It's as if the entire world were populated with only adult males.
How patriarchal of them.
Well, it's rooted in history. You can kind of like imagine that when you had these places that were super secret and guarded and they were rare, I mean in Tennessee and South Carolina and, you know, New Mexico and Nevada, places like that that were part of the Manhattan Project, they were sending military guys and paramilitary guys into those situations. Doctors were experimenting with radiation. They were all, to the last one, males. And they chose the young military man to be the reference. And they defined the reference man. He's 28 years old. He's 5'10". He weighs 140-some pounds, and he has a, quote, Caucasian lifestyle. And they've upgraded that wording to Northern European lifestyle. So this is who they assume is getting every single radiation exposure. And that's got to change, because it turns out that our bodies are different, that the same amount of radiation affects little girls twice as much as little boys, and the whole class of children are affected more than the whole class of adults. And the really interesting and sad thing is that the cancers, this is all talking in terms of cancer incidence, don't all happen as childhood cancer. They happen across the entire lifetime in this data from Hiroshima and Nagasaki. 200,000 people were tracked in a case-controlled study. I mean, honestly, when I talk about this, my stomach starts to turn over and I begin to cry and almost not be able to talk about it, because to me it was so incredibly wrong that my government chose to use the first nuclear weapons ever on cities full of people. That is so wrong. And when I use the data, I'm crying, because these are real lives. They're not models. They're not, you know, possible risk estimates. These are actual, you know, illnesses and deaths that I'm looking at. And yet, at the same time, all the other studies are of nuclear workers. And who are they? They're adults. And what kind of adults? Almost exclusively male. And so in all those worker studies, we never would have found this information about gender and age. It just isn't there. The only big data set that we have that has all ages and both genders are these people who survived this unthinkable event and were studied and were turned into numbers. And I spent 5 weeks in Japan among them and was humbled to meet them and talk to them and cry with them. And yet, from their lives and their deaths, we have this incredibly important piece of information that women who are exposed in childhood are walking around with 10 times more disease than the guy who all the standards are based on. And now that we have areas of the world where people are growing up one generation after another in contaminated areas, we have to understand that all the projections are off. Every single last one, because there are no adults that weren't exposed as children unless they came in from outside, and who would move to that area? You know, who's going to buy land in Fukushima now? So,
well, I read somewhere, Mary, and this, you know, I don't know if you know this crazy game that's going around, Pokemon Go, and it's a virtual reality game where when people look through their phones, they'll actually see little monsters, whatever, in certain places. Well, I really did.
Some at Fukushima, I did.
Yes, they did. And that's what got my attention to this game. And I went, why would anybody put this game in a nuclear, you know, radiated area? How sick and twisted is that?
Well, I heard that they have removed them. But what you have to understand is there's thousands of people who go there every day to work. When we were in Fukushima Prefecture, we discovered that people who have homes that are in the exclusion zone, many of them still go there. We met one woman whose home is so contaminated she'll never be able to go there again. But many others have homes that are being remediated, and although they are not clean, and I don't think anyone should ever live in them again, they are being told by their government that that is what's going to happen, that they're going to be able to move back in their home. So they're going there on a regular basis with a special pass and for a particular amount of time to do maintenance and keep the place clean and chase the rodents out.
Oh,
so there's quite a bit of activity going on in that exclusion zone. And so it's understandable that somebody had this insane idea that they'd have them play this game while they're there.
Oh, God, yeah, very insane. And it's nice to hear that they took it out. I mean, it's really people. I mean, I like you said, it's insane. And it, you know...
I have to tell you, though, that there are temples and people are buried at those temples, and there's a very strong tradition that monks will chant, Buddhist monks will chant for the people who are buried there. And there are monks who don't live at those temples anymore, but they commute into the exclusion zone in order to do their monk jobs. This is, I mean, I can't fathom it, but this is going on.
Well, you know, I think when you're in post-traumatic shock, that you just try to live your life as normal as you think you can, and it's not reality. You know?
And or the commitment is so incredibly amazing that we really can't, in our culture, fathom it. I mean, I'll just give you a brief example. I was traveling with Arnie Gunderson, who is with Fair Winds, which is a wonderful website for anybody who doesn't know it. It's with an E, S-A-I-R-E-W-I-N-D-S, fairwinds.org. And Arnie has done a lot of videos and very important educational materials on what happened at Fukushima during the accident and since. And so he was in Japan when I was in Japan. We didn't actually travel together the whole time because I did not want to go into the exclusion zone. But he did, and he saw this temple, and they went over to it, and he walked in, and this man comes out of the back room, all dressed in his monk robes, and the interpreter's trying to make an introduction, and the monk turns in perfect English and says to Arnie, "You're Arnie Gunderson. I know you from YouTube." And there's Arnie, who's traveled halfway around the world, with his jaw dropping to the floor that, you know, he's actually succeeded. He's actually reached some of the people that he was hoping to educate. And it's just amazing when you have those moments of like, the needle being threaded and just, you know, I don't know how to describe it. It's just mind-blowing to have that kind of connect happen. So, you know, these are very unique and bizarre and heart-wrenching and heartbreaking situations, and yet it's also where the human spirit rises sometimes to its most amazing.
What is nuclear fission?
Nuclear fission, F-I-S-S-I-O-N, is a word for splitting an atom. And you know, a lot of people don't understand that human beings invented this activity. Yes, it does happen on our planet in very minute amounts, and probably in the far, far distant past it happened even more. But the uranium deposits don't have industrial levels of plutonium in them, and plutonium is one of the outcomes of fission, of splitting atoms. And that only began in 1942 in Chicago with a group of guys who were part of a team that was racing other teams on the planet. It was that horrific time called the Second World War. And, you know, it was all born in the pressure of who was going to run the world. But that is when we started splitting atoms under a tennis court at the University of Chicago. And it had, you know, at the time there was like a calculation going on and a big argument. If you started this self-sustaining chain reaction, that's, you know, what they did, not just split one atom, but they got an atom that split to split another and another and another. And when you get that into an exponential run, that was the invention of the nuclear bomb. If you can keep it where splitting one makes another one split, and it's just a slower thing, that's more like a nuclear reactor that they use for making electric power. But in both cases, the whole goal of the activity is heat. And the unintended consequence is massive amounts of radioactivity, like never has appeared on this planet while life has been here until we started making it. So it's these lethal levels of stuff that you can decide, oh, I should put it on a truck and send it from Chalk River down to Savannah River site. It's this type of radioactivity that has created a whole new phase on this planet. When I was talking to you about coming on, I said, yeah, it's a boundary line. There's before fission and there's after fission. It's one of those demarcations in history.
Wow. Who invented the bomb again?
Well, there was a whole bunch of guys, and actually they were friends. And you can look up, and on YouTube on Netflix and streaming, there's all kinds of portrayals of this now. But it was guys like Einstein and Bohr and Fermi and Szilard and Heisenberg. Heisenberg of the Heisenberg Uncertainty Principle. They were all colleagues, and they were all looking for how to release this energy. And they all knew that it could be a weapon, but they also knew that it was fundamental to understanding the nature of our universe. And indeed, it has been part of this huge explosion of our relationship with space and time and matter and antimatter and all these things that we now hear about on a fairly regular basis. None of that was understood before this modern era of fission and physics. And, you know, I wish it had never happened. I wish we could turn that clock back and not go there. But so many things that are in our world today would drop out if we turned that clock back.
Like what?
It's a little bit of a stretch to say the whole electronic thing, but yeah, the whole electronic thing is tied up with our understanding of matter that came from understanding radioactivity and how to split atoms. Tied up together.
Are you familiar with the Hadron Collider project that they want
to
what they are doing?
I haven't been tracking them recently, but I had some truck with them some years ago when they were first starting up. And I certainly am not happy with that project either. And I certainly was part of the chorus saying you should study the outcomes more before you go turning this thing on. Because, you know, it's big people with PhDs and lots of fame saying you can make a black hole with this thing, and you don't. I mean, it's bad enough to pretend like we're making star-type activity, which is what fission is. Now, our sun actually does the opposite. It puts atoms together instead of breaking them apart. But still, it's much more like a star to release the energy of atoms and make atom bombs and make nuclear reactors that make this massive amount of new radiation and radioactivity. That's all much more like being a star than being a planet. And so now you have this Large Hadron Collider that's under the border area between France and Switzerland, and they're accelerating streams of matter in opposite directions, and then when they get fast enough to create the study conditions they want, they collide them together. They smash them into each other, and they say they're trying to recreate the Big Bang. Well, hey, is this planet really where you would want to have a Big Bang or a black hole? I don't think so. I think those are activities that happen cosmologically, not here. But they all act like you can do it and it won't hurt anything. And
isn't that having a God complex?
Yeah. And you know, honestly, Kathy, I think that this difference between males and females about radiation harm, when half of the planet is walking around with bodies that are 10 times more likely to be harmed by radiation, I think that might account for why in 25 years, most of the people I've known who were really focused on the safety and health impacts of these activities are women. And I'm not saying men don't care, but their approach is to go after the economics, to go after the security, to go after the power negotiations. They are not very interested in the health and safety. That's just not their thing. Well, if you're 10 times less likely to be harmed by it, maybe that's why you don't care about that. I think it's in our bodies why we're different.
Wow, that's true. That's darn true. Yeah. God, what was somebody telling me about? Oh, God, Johnson & Johnson baby powder, how it can give women cancer of the ovaries and, as far as I'm concerned, mess up the uterus. But, you know, it's all tied together.
The talc going up in there, you mean?
Yes, because it's poison. And yeah. Some of it has asbestos. And a guy said, you know, if it would have endangered a man, do you think they would have, they would have left it on the market and not have said a word?
No, I agree, which is why my friend Helen Caldicott always talks about testicles when she's talking about radiation. Now, you know, there is a difference there, too. Girls are born with every egg in their ovaries at birth. Boys are born with spermatogonia that make new sperm every 20 minutes. So once they become mature, obviously little boys aren't making sperm every 20 minutes. But in adolescence, that whole process starts up, and that's a fundamental difference, too. I mean, I think we women just have to stop waiting. I'm honestly feeling like I don't have a calling. I have a yanking. I've been invited to go to St. Petersburg, Russia in October to talk about gender and radiation at a regional conference that will include some of the emergency responders from the most contaminated countries we have, like Belarus, Russia, and Kazakhstan. We'll all be in the room of these international Red Cross people, and they want to hear about gender and radiation. Yay! And then I'm going to be at the gender summit at the EU in November. And so, we're blessed to have callings, but I'm having a yanking. around the world.
It's a great passion, though. Look what you're doing. People are starting to respond. That's exciting.
It is exciting. And I do feel that I have a certain obligation. Knowledge is responsibility, especially when it's something that people have a right to know about. I mean, I think about the whole medical world where we know the radiation exposures are happening, and I don't challenge the fact that there can be great benefit, but there's a lot of radiological procedures that are just done routinely or because the doctor needs to show that they've done everything they could have done when it isn't even life and death, you know. But if a little boy's going to have a CAT scan, that's scary enough, but a little girl having one, that's twice as bad. And the medical people don't know that. The parents don't know that. You know, in adult phase, it's a little bit different. It's only 50% more for women. But when I went to Japan, I said, guys, I have a 50% greater chance of getting an illness from this trip. So I'm not going to go out and mess around in those contaminated fields. If you want to do it, that's up to you. And, you know, I mean, I know, and I have a right to know. But so many other people, as in half of the planet, doesn't know, and they also have a right to know.
One thing that I saw a blurb from Dr. Helen Caldicott, since you brought her up, and she was talking about, and oh my God, can you help me get her on my program? I would love you forever. But she was talking about vehicles and cars coming from Japan and how contaminated they are that are made there, and how our government may check one air purifier in the car when you've got maybe 2,000 cars and go, okay, you're good. I personally wouldn't buy a car from Japan after Fukushima.
Well, I always check. I'll admit it. I am not saying to everybody, don't buy Japanese cars, but I made sure that last time I bought one, they were before 2011.
I will tell people, you be careful about buying cars from Japan, because it could be, you might be driving in a radiated coffin, as far as I'm concerned, and people need to know that.
Right. People do need that.
And I tell, and when you go look for a car, if it starts with a J in your VIN number, that means it was made in Japan. And you may not want, you might want to see if there's something American made.
Right. Right.
You know, it's not the same anymore. And then I took it a step further, Mary. There's a lot of steel that comes from Japan. Now, are they shipping the steel over here to the United States? So it's made, the cars are actually made here, but with Japanese steel, which I'm sure is radiated.
You know, I'm not an expert enough in this part to tell you, but I do know that three cars that I drove that were American cars, this is like a decade ago, decade and a half ago, when they got too old to drive, they were sent off to Japan. So it was U.S. steel in those cars that got sent to Japan, and I always joke that the Chrysler got melted down and made into a Toyota. So I'm not saying there isn't now Japanese origin metal that's coming here. I certainly think that that's quite possible. And I also agree with you that the metals are some of the biggest areas for possible contamination. And the U.S. steel unions and also the steel producers have been really one of our allies in stopping the deregulation of radioactive waste in the United States, because the Department of Energy has a huge amount of nickel from the bomb complex that it wants to deregulate and put into batteries and into steel production. And the steel industry has been saying, no, that's a bad idea. And, you know, the scrap industry has been saying, no, that's a bad idea.
Bless their heart.
I'm not saying it's perfect, but, you know, some really significant things have happened where a Cobalt 60 machine was in the United States for medical purposes. It got scrapped to Mexico. People didn't know what that beautiful blue powder was. They got lethal levels of radiation exposure from playing with it. Some of it got into the scrap metal there, got made into table legs, and when a truck was bringing a load of tables back into the United States from Mexico, the shipment set off the sensors at Los Alamos, which I believe was more than 100 miles from the truck. So,
God.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's not, it's very leaky, dirty system. But there is a commitment. I mean, people in the steel industry in the United States anyway know the difference. Now, in Japan, it's getting all foggy and messy and mixed up because the federal government decided that it would be good to take all the debris from the tsunami, much of which was not radioactive until the meltdowns. And the meltdowns were not, you know, they were a couple days later. But still, a lot of that debris then became radioactive from the Fukushima Daiichi emissions. And they decided to ship all that all over the country and incinerate it in municipal incinerators for, you know, garbage that were not set up to handle radioactivity at all. And the only thing I can get from that is they decided to raise the radiation levels over the entire country so that there wouldn't be such a big difference between Fukushima and other places. That's all I can get. I have no idea why they decided to do that.
Well, Mary, you work for the Nuclear Information Resource Service. If people wanted to come and do volunteer work, how would they get a hold of you?
Well, the best way to reach me is at my email, which is maryo@nirs.org. And I have a phone number, which is 828-252-8409. I work in Asheville, North Carolina. The rest of the organizational office is in Tacoma Park, Maryland. And our website is www.nirs.org. And in the next month or two, we're going to be unveiling a brand new upgrade of our website. So right now it's complicated and messy, and probably between now and the end of the year, it's going to turn into a much smoother, easier to access place. So I encourage people to check it out now, but come back in a couple months at NIRS.org, N-I-R-S.org.
Well, if you all have a passion about stopping nuclear, then, you know, get a hold of Mary, and she can guide you.
Can I share a personal development?
Yes.
I am launching a new project. It's called the Gender and Radiation Impact Project. And the reason I'm decided to make it a project is I really don't want to start a new organization, but I do want to devote myself. I figure I have 10 more years of work. I want to devote myself to this issue of helping existing institutions that are committed to people's health, committed to some amount of safety around radiation and nuclear things, to understand this gender factor and help them to take it forward. I'm not a medical researcher. I'm really not any kind of researcher, but having discovered this pattern in the numbers and having had it confirmed by three other people, it's one of those things that if we don't act on it, we're really sinking our own ship. So GRIP, Gender and Radiation Impact Project, is being just beginning. And years ago, one of my heroines, Virginia Woolf, the writer, said that women should write, and women should write about everything. But before you write, you should have a room of your own. And today, it's not that uncommon for a woman to have a room of her own. Back when Virginia was writing, it was much more rare. Women were living in situations where they just mostly did not have a room where they could shut the door and write. And the reason I'm bringing this up is that if I'm going to stand with both patriarchy and the entire nuclear establishment, I need a fund of my own. So I have an agreement with my current employer, and I'm working on creating a fund for this 10-year project and launch off, because the work that we've been doing, and I really believe in it, is very confrontational and oppositional and challenging the nuclear industry. I want this phase to be much more inclusive. I want it to be sitting down and saying, this is new information. Now what do we do about it? And not going with blame, not going with attack, but instead handing people who are motivated the opportunity to take this on and make it theirs and spread it out as big as we can get it, because this is half of the world's population we're talking about, and ultimately the human life cycle depends on every phase. You can't have a standard man without a little girl. And if we don't start protecting little girls, we're not going to have any standard men. So,
and people need to know about this because, Fukushima's been going on for 5 years, and we have
Chernobyl
all been breathing this radiation.
Yep, and Chernobyl for 30, and Three Mile Island before that, and all the nuclear weapons tests, the massive amount of radioactivity released into our environment from that. And yes, it's wonderful that the X-rays have less radiation. They're digital now. They're lighter weight. But I've noticed my practitioners think they can order three times as many then. So it's just like driving a small car. We were all supposed to save gas. Instead, we just drove a whole lot more. Anyway, I'm looking for some grandparents who understand this whole idea and want to get behind me. So I'm available, MaryO@NEARS.org.
Well, thank you very much, Mary, for coming on and sharing all this information. I hope you can come back again.
Thank you for having me, Kathy. I'll be glad to come anytime. And I can't make any promises, but you're welcome to be in touch with me about your goals for other guests. It's one of the things I do in my job, is to network and refer and to bring our community together. So.
Oh, you are so cool. I'm so glad my friends know you.
I am very happy we have friends in common, too. And honestly, everybody who gets up in the morning and takes care of themselves or their children or their parents or their garden, that entire group of human beings is on our team. The guys who are trying to do something like blow up the world, no, their team is very small. And we should remember that. We are a whole lot bigger than them.
Yeah, it's nice to be reminded, It makes a difference when we all come together, that's for sure.
Yeah. So, thanks. Thanks very much.
Oh, you're welcome, and good night.
Good night.
Remember, everybody, this is the full moon tonight, and you're going to feel it for the next couple of days. So if your emotions are running a little high and you're thinking about people from way back, this is why. And we're still in Mercury in retrograde. I don't know how much time we have left, Joe, and if we're just about out of time or not, but the CDC is trying to also push through some new, really, really awful new programs, literally saying that they want to own our bodies and have the right to give us any kind of shot or anything that they deem is necessary, a vaccine at their whim at any time. And this is going to also affect all of you people that are going to be traveling to the United States. So you might want to check that out. And I can't find that information right in front of me. I don't know where I put it. And I will give it to you the next time. You can probably look it up online, just CDC and their new policy that they want to make. And they're actually asking people to voice an opinion. And you can tell them how Nazi it is and how far-reaching it is. And whoever created this thought should be fired. And on that high note, I hope you have a really, really lovely week. And remember, you're still in Mercury in retrograde, so if things aren't going quite like you want them to, don't get upset and just go with the flow. And on that level, aloha.
Hi everyone, this is Aline Pistanio. Are you interested in the paranormal, the occult, the supernatural? Then join me and my co-host Bernadine LeBlanc in the Supernatural Substation every Friday night, 9 Central, 10 Eastern, only on UPRN 107.7 FM, New Orleans. This is UPRN, the United Public Radio Network, 107.7 FM, New Orleans.
The Campbell's Chunky Everyman All-Star League.
Chad Oliver's now questionable.
You still got to start him.
Dude can bundle up a baby in under 6 seconds.
And when he got his appendix removed, he didn't miss one